me see. What does it say?
Solomon, watch your head, all right? You're in the camera too much.
Power, power. It's the one. Power, power. It's the who. Power, power. Yeah, yeah. Black, Hispanic, and Native. Power, power. It's the one. Power, power. It's the who.
I'm probably going to power. Yeah.
Every Saturday morning, you need to be tuning in. Wake up, get crumbs out your eyes. We about to go live, so come get the schooling in. I'm out our rotation. We answer the questions like, how do we get out this lower state? We let the script prophesy. We bring the Bible to life so that you relate.
We'll save it for next show.
But that word we read.
I only got sound. I guess you guys did not fix it. From last week, it comes in and out. I only got sound on my right.
Okay, I'll be right there. Give me 1 second.
And now came back, but it's it goes in and out.
Power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power, yeah, yeah. Black, Hispanic, Latino. Power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power, yeah, yeah. Black, Hispanic, Latino. Power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power, yeah, yeah. Black, Hispanic, Latino. Power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power.
Soldier Eric, can you look to your left a little? Just a little.
Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour Plus Edition. I'm Captain Yahshua, along with
Officer Isaac,
Officer Solomon,
and Soldier Eric.
And Soldier Eric. All right, all right. So I want to say we're ready here, but we're not ready because I have no sound in my left earbud.
Turn my headphones up.
I have no sound. And if y'all were watching last week, you know I had complained that sound went out in my ear. So our tech team. Hey, I have a theory. I think when you're in the IT office, like anything with IT, that it just people lose brain cells in that office.
You could be correct, Captain.
I think it's like, you know, that I had heard, I can't validate this. When I was a kid, I remember learning about Albert Einstein, right? Because he's supposed to be such a genius and everything, right?
Right. Yeah.
And they said Einstein couldn't tie his own shoes.
Really?
Yeah.
I heard that too.
So they were saying like limitations on the brain. The dude was so smart in other things, but certain other elements he could not do because of the brain capacity he was using for other stuff.
Wow.
Whoa. Right. So I think that's what happens with IT. I think that's what happens with the IT team. Well, it's better now. I hope it stays that way.
It's like a compliment in there, too, though.
I hope that's true. Yeah. Hey. Bro, I want them to be able to see you one day. Can we do like a picture? Can you look into how we do a picture-in-picture thing? Maybe you could be like in the upper right corner, like
that
when we talk
dope.
To you. I want them to see you. I like when we get on you so you can explain yourself to the nation.
What had happened was.
Right.
Hell no.
The rest of y'all your earbuds are good?
Yes, sir.
The rest
yes,
of
sir.
Y'all good? Okay, all right.
Yeah, Captain's like Stephen Hawking. You remember that guy?
Right.
Yeah, he can't even turn a page. But right. He's supposed to be the smartest.
All jacked up. Well, I guess when you're confined like that, you can't, there's not many vices that you could pick up, right?
Right.
I mean, he's not playing video games,
no.
Right? He's not out chasing women.
No.
Right?
He can't drive.
He can't drive. Like, nothing. So, read.
How we turn the page.
The dude just read. You know what I'm saying? So you're right about that. Hey, that was the price he paid for selling his soul to the devil. Well, his soul been sold to the devil,
right.
Being Edom. But hey, I don't know, man. I say my theory is like people like that, they're not open to vices.
True.
So they're able to be focused. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's kind of like when you read in 1 Corinthians 7 about marriage, and it says them that are unmarried are able to care of the things for the Lord, right?
Oh, yeah.
Meaning their focus, they don't have those distractions of marriage. Not that marriage is dishonorable.
Yeah.
We've gone over that, you know, at length. But I use that example to say there are things that can distract you.
Yeah,
see, like a brother, this is why the scripture also tells you a brother who gets married, right? He got to fall back for a year.
Because
his mind ain't going to be in the battle.
Right.
His mind ain't going to be in the battle. He's going to be... You know,
it's gonna be somewhere else.
Well, right, he's gonna be out in the and think about it. He's gonna be out in the battlefield, and let's say he could discipline his mind to not be thinking about, you know, having sex with his wife.
Right.
he's going to have that care and that concern, and that's going to make him fearful. That's going to make him hesitant in the battlefield. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that comes with that. So you need men out there that are focused, that understand that. So I guess the Most High says it takes about a year. I mean, I've seen brothers that they in that honeymoon phase way longer than that, way longer than that. But they say it takes about a year, according to the scripture, for you to kind of get over that and be able to discipline yourself to get to where you need to be. What's going on? What happened? Why are you back in here? Well, you came in here for a cable that don't even have anything to do with in here?
Nothing.
Interrupting the show? Did you not see the on-air sign?
That's bro, man.
Bro,
from the
and then you real go.
That's one of the sandwich. Game for a sandwich.
Gosh. Hey, word. Martin.
Yeah, bro, man.
Brother man, right? This is coming up in there. Oh,
the
my
refrigerator's
God.
In that room.
He said IT going to be fine. Yeah, they are mighty, all man. Praises. They are. I'm just sharing my analysis. That's all. I'm just saying.
Right.
Because it's not just here. It seems like that office, no matter where you at, no matter what's going on, like something be messing up. And I get it. There's a lot. I wouldn't want to be in that office. I don't envy them in that office. It's like one of those things when you do good. It's one of those offices where you do good, nobody's like telling you nothing, and when you do bad, you get into business. So, but
come
I just think
on, man.
going back to my point with Einstein and the marriage focus and everything else. I think that their minds are so focused on doing what they do to you know, all these buttons and switches and everything else on the internet.
Right.
That common sense kind of goes out the window, right, in certain moments.
You know, common sense isn't that common anymore.
That is true.
Yes, sir.
That is true. Supposedly, Will Rogers said that.
Really?
Yes. That Edomite cowboy-ish guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they say.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Psalms 58:3 say something different.
That's right. But yeah, man, so the marriage thing, I've known brothers that they've been on that honeymoon phase, and they're like useless, man. They're not the same brothers. Like, I'm telling you, I've not seen a brother yet that gets married and his work does not decline initially.
You know what? Sasson. Officer Sasson. Sasson Smooth.
Yeah, nah, but you know why?
I didn't mean to put him on the spot.
You know why Sass is different?
Because he already has experiences.
Well, no. He's working two jobs, but the brother's always busy anyway.
Right. Understood.
So I'll give him credit in that he hasn't let his work decline, right?
Right.
But he does not have time and opportunity. I mean, he has his goals. I'm not faulting the brother. He wouldn't be an officer if he wasn't. But he doesn't have the time to kind of be more and do more right now.
Understood.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, I think that was just different with him because he working two jobs already. So he's already limited at home.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But, like, you're going to be a type of brother that it's a wrap for you, bro.
Hey, I might be the phenomenon.
Nah, you're not.
No, I'm not.
Nah. I mean, unless something's changing your spirit, you're not.
Okay.
I can see you. You're gonna have.
No.
you're gonna have at least a year long honeymoon.
A year.
Yeah.
Then
the other side of that is that these wives be just like they'll be the most dynamite sister in the body.
Right.
And then they get married and their work decline.
Yeah.
You know.
It go both ways.
Though. Right. Right.
Sure.
Yep.
Wow.
So, but you know the men, that's like, come on, the men, you gotta be ready.
Right.
Remember this.
Yes,
remember
sir.
This,
he wasn't ready.
Lock it in.
He wasn't ready. Yeah, I mean, those of us who've been married like a certain number of years, it's just different. Like the longer you're married, right? Like you have moments of that fire. You know, it becomes like a roller coaster.
Right.
Okay.
Right?
And not that it's necessarily a lot of downs. You know, if you apply the scriptures and what to do in marriage and things like that, you'll be able to kind of, but it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's peaks and valleys. It's kind of like, you know, ups and then some leveled out stuff where just things going on and things like that.
Trouble in the flesh.
Nah, I'm not even trouble in the flesh, man. I mean, I'm not saying I don't have that. I certainly do. I'm too focused, man.
Dig that.
I'm too focused. And she knows, bro. She be telling people like if things ever got so crazy that she didn't want to correct herself, like, I'm out. Until you fix yourself.
Okay, all praises.
Until you fix yourself, right? We're not getting divorced. I'm out. She knows that. She knows that. So that's why, like, she'll fix herself, you know? Mm-hmm. It might take a day.
What do they call it? God mind or something. Christ conscious. They say that in New York a lot. Nah. Oh, I can tell it's a no. By the way, you respond. Yeah.
That's none of my business. Hey, so, you know, y'all can speak, right, on the show. We can talk. I don't know what's going on. Oh, okay. So y'all could talk because I didn't do this part for the show. I didn't set up my link. So go ahead and talk.
All praises. How y'all doing?
Enduring. Let me put it like that.
Right.
Bruh. Ready for Tabernacles? Go ahead. Talk about Tabernacles.
Yeah, I'm getting ready for Tabernacles.
How many tents do you have?
I got two, but I think
you coming out to
I'm going out to Bakersfield.
Yeah. How many days?
Lord's will the whole time.
So when are you getting there?
Probably Sunday.
Wow. All right. All praises. Dan, so you rolling deep.
Yeah.
Or did you try to put them all in one tent so you don't got to pay the extra tent fee?
No, we got two.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Hey, let me tell you, the West Coast fees are a bargain, right? Everything's more expensive in the East. Like, if you see the East Coast fees, I'm talking about hundreds of dollars.
Really?
Yeah. Some people was complaining over here about a couple hundred for a family.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
Well, they do it by lot over there.
Right.
And for a family, you're probably gonna need at least a half lot, and depending on your size of your family, maybe a full lot. And it's exponentially high. I'm not going to go publish prices, but I'm just telling you it's more. I still think it's a bargain because you ain't staying in someplace else for those type of prices.
That's true.
Try to go camping by yourself and then, you know, have all that stuff together, you know. So, I mean, Israel's always going to murmur, man.
And we kind of got our own, like, Phoenix spot where all of us kind of hang out for the tabernacles up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, that's the ghetto, the south side, right?
South side.
Of course. Where else Judah going to be? So,
we said it was the ghetto because space. But, no, I think the north side going to be crowded, too, this year because we got several hundred more than we did in 2019.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, several hundred more than in 2019.
That's a lot.
Going to be out there. But, yeah, man, I was saying before the show, like, my head's in tabernacle mode. Like, I'm already. Like, we week and a half out from when we hit the road?
Yeah. You get that list, officer? There's a list of like things that you need.
Nah, I didn't get this. All praises.
Yes, sir.
Send it. Yeah. I still gotta get it.
Are you going?
Yeah, I'm going.
When are you going?
Sunday, I believe.
Yeah. Did you go at least out here with brothers?
Yes, I did.
So, but like, did you bum off of other people's stuff, like their tents and everything, or you got your
own
setup?
Oh, I was bumming it. Yeah. This was like, what was this? What year was this?
Oh, I figure you young, so you know.
Yeah, this was Shia was single at this time, so right. Me and Shia was chilling. Uh-huh. It was out there freezing.
So you want that list?
Yeah, yes,
he needs
need
that
list. Yeah.
He gonna be the fool that show up there freaking looking for handouts, bro.
Nah, they said it's a Walmart down the street. I'm there. Yeah,
it is.
Damn.
Yeah.
You can't even get through to Walmart because you're too busy shaloming everybody on the way.
Oh yeah, I'm excited about that.
I got a new rule for y'all. After the first shalom that you've seen me in the place, all right.
We just do head nods.
If I'm walking and doing this, that means I'm not stopping to give you the fist. If I do the fist shake like
that's
this,
bars.
Like shalom.
That means raise up.
That means raise up. You're not gonna get the dap, right? I'm trying to go to the bathroom. I'm hungry. I got somewhere to be. All right. That's the signal of.
What was the slogan again? If I raise and give the fist.
I don't know. What? Y'all could come up with that stuff.
You rhyme.
I'm not snazzy like that.
You just rhyme.
Did I?
Yeah. Bars.
I didn't mean to. Gotta keep talking. I gotta do this. I'm still doing this. Why are you getting all quiet? No dead air time. Trying to put this together.
No dead air time.
For the viewers out there that are watching, Officer Isaac here is still single, looking for a sister. He is, how old are you, Isaac? 25?
Man, I just hit 27. I'm 27.
All praises. 27 years old.
27, looking 20, 21.
Something like that.
Yeah, but don't reach out to him directly.
Right.
Let us help you with that.
Right.
Let us help you with that.
Shy out here throwing the lobs.
You got something, Solomon? You all quiet over there, bro. I got nervous. I said, I don't know if I'm going to get talkative Solomon or pensive Solomon today.
His chain is fly.
Solomon,
it's a car on it.
I know. I was looking at that. I told him it was kind of dope. I'm gonna get a pensive Solomon, the thinker.
The introspective Solomon.
Yep.
Deep Solomon.
Right. Bring it out, Solomon. Let him know.
Yeah.
One of the I forget which one it was, this radio show, and you were looking at Captain Aparium, and he was like, "Why are you looking at me like I spoke to you?"
Yeah, that was a few shows ago.
That was hilarious.
Yeah.
He said the same thing to you last week.
Yeah, he was like, "Why are you just staring at me?"
Right. Hey,
in amazement, man. Y'all don't realize.
Hey, like I said, I'm not trying to be rude when I say that. It's like sometimes, bro, it's a lot of people trying to shalom. So,
oh, I understand.
You know, I mean, you know, obviously, still, I understand the respect and all that, but I'm not gonna ignore you. I might just do a. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
You the mighty Captain Yasuo.
No, I don't know about all that, man.
I'm gonna play around.
I'm
like,
a servant to all.
Oh my God, it's Captain Yasuo.
Nah, I'm a servant to all. I'd be excited to talk to people because you know, I told you Tabernacles is my favorite because that's kind of the one where, for the most part, I'm not really in a rush. It's just chill, free time, you know. So we can just relax and whatnot. So you know, I get to chit chat with people and stuff like that. Hey, I went and hung out in the ghetto last year.
Oh yeah,
I seen you over there.
I popped in. I know. I thought they didn't think I was gonna go. I remember I heard Elkanon. Oh, they came. Me and Amariah went.
They hit you with the
I was like,
the
wow. They thought I was. They thought they probably like, nah. They live in the high life up there on the north side.
The captains have no dealings with the Jews.
they got electric over there. They got power. Up there.
we do have electric up that side. Yes, we do have electric.
Amariah just hit me up. He said, you know, you ain't ready, man.
He right.
Yeah, you're right.
He 1,000% right.
Man.
Let's go to Solomon for commentary.
Yeah, let's do that.
Oh my goodness.
That's it. Oh my goodness. You excited?
I'm excited. The thing is that I had such a busy day just getting back from Denver at work today. I had a lot of catching up to do. And we're in our new site, so HR isn't set up in the building yet.
Oh, so you had a stressful, hectic day?
Well, I was trying to request the days off for Tabernacles.
Oh, so you're nervous right now?
Yeah, because I'm like, Lord's will.
Oh, you just told me that you Oh, so you meant Lord's will, like maybe?
No, Lord's will, like I paid the fees and I'm going to keep the Sabbath and everything, but I haven't made it official with my job.
Oh, I got you. I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
And that's one of those things where I can't just apply for my house. It has to be at a site that has the working right. Interface.
Okay.
All
right. So we are going to continue with the Dominican history. All right. We're going to get to that. There's a little bit of a segment that I'm going to go over. Hey, do we have a Latin inventor that you're going to bring up for me? Oh, thank you for bringing that up. I did say that I would finish that article. I did say that. So I could finish there, and that'll help me get back on point to the book.
Yeah, but we'll bring up the inventor.
You bring up a Latin inventor? All right, okay. I'm telling you, I don't know what it is. Every Wednesday, I mean, I get heartburn, but every Wednesday I get heartburn before the show.
What do you eat?
I hardly eat on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I'm not trying to be jacked up before the show.
You probably got to switch it. Maybe eat some.
Maybe eat more? Like have the thing that you did?
Nah, not that. What's some good for heartburn? Some like fruit or something?
I get
non-dairy
I take
yogurt.
Prescribe my, the only medicine I'm prescribed to from the doctor is heartburn medication.
Nah, I tried that. That thing made it work, man. I did that Prilosec.
Yeah.
It made it worse.
Yeah?
Mm.
I do the,
yeah.
I think it's a Omeprazole.
The analogy with that, Prilosec I think is the brand name. The analogy with that is that they said that Prilosec is like dropping a nuclear bomb to reduce stomach acid in your like it's so strong.
Really?
And then what people wind up doing is they'll have problems producing enough acid, and then it kind of messes you up that way too. So I've been using some natural stuff that it's way better than it's been. Like I was getting it every day for a long time and stuff. Yeah. I found like this natural, because you know, like the internet listens to you. So I started getting suggestions for this natural heartburn stuff.
The internet
on
know
Facebook.
What you're thinking.
Right.
Right, right.
So I said it read my mind, and I was like, okay. So I've been taking these pills, like a 2-pill combo, and it's like natural stuff, like licorice root and different things like that. And so there's one you're supposed to take before like a heavy meal, and it increases your acid so that you can digest better, so you're not producing acid after the fact, right? And then there's one you take after that's supposed to kind of like upheal the esophagus. And like I said, it has like licorice root and some other stuff. And it's been helping. But I don't know. It's like every Wednesday I get freaking heartburn. I bring the damn Pepto-Bismol in. Because I'm trying not to take like Pepcid and stuff like that because I don't want to reduce it. I'm trying to like equalize it.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know.
I was
pineapple's
looking at
good. Fermented foods. Man, you know, I had tried kombucha. That thing gave me worse heartburn.
I don't know
what it is. I've never had it.
Isn't it like a tea?
It's like it's fermented fermented something. It's a liquid.
Some type of fruit.
Yeah. Oh, Cornelius sent me an inventor too, I think. Let me see what we got here.
Okay.
Hold on.
Issachar Cornelius?
Yeah, my man Cornelius, bro.
Okay.
All praises. That means he's doing way better. My brother was sick. I'm glad you're doing better. He probably just drank some hot peppers or something. And oh, wow. This guy invented the machine gun.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Rafael Mendoza. The light machine gun in 1933. They got his frame up and everything. I'm gonna send that to y'all. We can do two of them, all right? We're going to do that one, too, as I bring it up. Hold on.
I thought the Germans invented the machine gun. That's what Esau
That's used. What Esau tells you, right? Oh, okay. That's what Esau tells you.
No, they stole everything from us,
of course.
Hold on. My thing is not working good. Damn, he invented
What is it? They blessings is the sword, so it makes sense that they stole that for sure.
All right, let's look at that one I just sent you first, and then we'll look at the one you pulled up. All right, let me see.
Portal light machine.
Okay, so go up to the top. So Rafael Mendoza. All right, that's a signed photo that they're selling. All right, it's on sale because he's Israel. So normally it'd be $333, but you get it for $22. The light machine gun, all right, in 1933. And then you have a blow up one of those if you can. Can you click on it? Does it get bigger? All right. Let me see that. All right, they do tell you the Germans invented it. It won't get bigger. There you go. Look at that. So the light machine gun, I guess it has like his patent and all that stuff on there. Look at that. They didn't invent nothing. They just stole ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, some people look at us sometimes when we say stuff like that. And they say, like, they never invented nothing. But it's true, bro. I think I was watching something with Farrakhan one time. I think I have it saved, too. I had said I was going to maybe do a class on it. And it's a clip where he's on one of them talk shows, like, from the...
Donahue.
From the 90s. Yeah, Donahue was fire, bro.
Yeah, I watched it the other day.
Donahue was fire, man. It was Donahue. What was the other one where it was real crazy? The freaking dude with the big mouth. Robert Downey Jr. Oh. Not Robert. Rob... It's not Robert Downey Jr. That's Iron Man. Oh, God.
Was it a radio show? Or,
it was a
TV show. Okay.
Yeah, man. It was something. It was. I can't remember his name. Gosh, Amari's messing with me. He invented the beard. Yeah, I'm going to. He got my throwback picture. Hey, save them pictures. I need that for when we release the beard line for my before and after.
That's right.
He got some funny ones up. I'm going to show it one day, too. He said, I invented the beard. Yeah, he's been telling me that he'd be seeing me on the show and he looking at my beard. He's like, damn, what the hell?
It didn't come out of nowhere, though.
Morton Downey. Bishop Yaroslav's watching. All praises, sir. Thank you. He probably cracking up there when I said Donahue and Morton Downey. Morton Downey.
Right.
Them shows were good. So anyway, Farrakhan was on the show one time and somebody said something about Esau. I'm going to butcher it. The clip was fire. And he basically told this Edomite who asked him the question, because, you know, they get up all smug on these shows and they like, I got this Negro, you know, and they're going to ask this question. And he got him on the show and Farrakhan says, it has something to do, Morton Downey Jr. That's right. He says, the white man's never been credited for anything. He said, when are we going to learn? He goes, they have no culture. They have no real history. Everything that they've ever done has been stolen or taken. They have no source. They have no, I mean, we understand biblically where their comings and goings are.
Right.
But if you really understand that and you think about it historically, he said basically they've never invented nothing. They've never created nothing. Everything they got is from somebody else's ideas. Even if history records will show you that they invented something, almost guaranteed it's not theirs.
Right.
It's not theirs.
You watch movies, The Last Samurai, Esau.
Right. Right. That's how they do it.
Last of the Mohicans, Esau.
Yep. What else you got? Okay. This was the other one. Juan Lozano. All right. He invented the jetpack.
Okay.
Wow. Juan Lozano, a Mexican inventor with a lifelong obsession with jetpacks, invented the rocket belt. Juan Lozano's company, I guess that's in Spanish, Tecnología. Sometimes I get tongue-tied. Aeroespacial Mexicana. So technological aerospace, Mexican technological aerospace. Sells the rocket belt for a hefty price. So you could buy that like privately, like I'm using it in my backyard. founder Juan Manuel Lozano has been working with hydrogen peroxide propulsion. I've read that. They were trying to do that before the electric cars took off, but they were saying that to get all the gas stations for hydrogen peroxide propulsion, like nobody was really buying onto it. BMW right. was even looking at a car like that.
Really?
They say it's the cleanest form of energy, hydrogen peroxide, and it's almost unlimitless. That's probably where they messed up, because electric they could still charge a lot of money for.
Right.
They didn't want to do the hydrogen peroxide. Since 1975, he's the inventor of the pentametallic catalyst pack to be used with organic hydrogen peroxide, and inventor of the most popular machine in the world to produce your own hydrogen peroxide
oh, wow.
to be used as rocket fuel. Wow.
Wow.
That's crazy. And he sells it.
Resourceful.
I wonder how much it is. Do they do layaway? Affirm financing? Do they got that for that? I'll get on that real quick.
Imagine Brothers in the Hood all on the jetpacks.
Man. Hey, and they were just showing recently, like I think on the internet, like someone else with like a jetpack type of thing.
Yeah.
And it's probably based off of this brother's technology.
Jetpacks and machine guns.
Yep. Yeah. I'll tell you. Nothing is theirs. No, jetpacks and machine guns. There you go. That's a combination. That's a combination.
Do a flyby.
Who the hell is that? Is that him?
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's him. Look at that. Testing it out. Okay.
All right.
That's wild, bro.
It is.
Because that's dangerous, bro. You testing that stuff out?
Wow.
What's going on? So those are our Mexican inventors. That's our Issachar inventors, our Latino inventors.
That is right.
All right. Oh, Cornelius sent me another thing. This dude made another. Wow. Okay. He sent he made another rifle. This dude was just making guns all over the place. Okay. All right. So I want to jump back to the article where we left off last week. I do want to finish up Simeon. We're going to do some questions. I did field some questions that didn't get answered last week. All right. We'll do a few of those biblical questions for y'all. And then I also have a short video that I'm going to show in regards to Cuba. And speaking of, I was going to show the first part of it because I'm thinking of Latin inventors. I'll give you a little insight into it. So, you know, on the show, we went over Cuba at length and Cuba with the blockade and bloqueo and all that stuff. So that also meant that they weren't getting access to any of the vaccines, which is right. We understand how we've taught about that here. Great that they didn't. So they made their own.
Vaccines?
Yes, they made four of them.
That's right.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
They made four of their own vaccines with no intention to make gain off of it, right? Because these Modernas and Pfizers sold to make money, so whatever's behind it. Right. They made their own vaccines. We're going to watch the clip, and he's going to talk about it. And, you know, a lot of these world powers, these seven heads, right, the most dominant ones, they're not sharing the vaccines with a lot of poor countries.
Right.
So Cuba's selling their vaccines now. I think Vietnam bought like 10,000 doses of it.
Right.
So they basically said, the hell with your tainted metal. You probably try to kill all of us on the island, even if you did offer it to us.
Right.
And they made their own vaccine.
That goes right back into what you were saying about the inventions and stuff. Even if we're not the first to invent something, we alternate and variate it and make it better than what it was.
That's the salt of the earth.
Yeah. Actually, Mariah just gave me a scripture on that, too.
Oh, Jeremiah. Where?
Jeremiah 51 and 19.
Go ahead, bring it out.
I got it. It says, the portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former of all things.
So it says the portion of Jacob is not like them, right? It says he's the former of all things, meaning we're before them. We're before them, meaning we're honored before them. That goes into us being the firstborn, even though we were the last nation name, right? Because the latter means the last,
right?
It says we're the former of all things. That's heavy. That's heavy. That's a good script. That's a good script. So let's jump back into this article. Do you remember where I left off? What paragraph? So we were talking about how Simeon, inspired by the young lords, filled in a space and they made el comité, right? Which is the committee. And a lot of the articles we were reading does very much speak about it from a perspective of Ephraim, because at the end, Ephraim wound up running it the most, right? But it was a Dominican-sourced, Tribe of Simeon, Dominican-sourced group, and they were fighting for housing rights, okay? They were fighting for housing rights. Let me put this here. Let me pull this out. make sure that I have it here. I'm going to go to the book first to give back some context. Let's go to page 125. All right, so this is, we're going back to the book, The Harvest of Empire, all right? This is by Juan Gonzalez. He actually speaks in the video that we're going to show about Cuba later. He's a Ephraim, also known as Puerto Rican, reporter and author in Harvest of Empires, the series that we've been referencing. We saw the documentary a few weeks back on the segment on Simeon, Dominicans. And then last week we were going into reading the book a little bit about it. And his main point in writing this book is, it's called The History of Latinos in America, and the documentary is to show that the reason why so many so-called Latinos immigrate to the United States. And it's not that, like Trump said, shithole countries. Are they so-called crappy environments? Yes, absolutely. But the point being that the United States created those environments by right. destabilizing those regions, right. by maintaining the state of enslavement, but without the chains, all right, that you read in Deuteronomy 28, the 28th chapter, 48 verse, right? It says, we would have yokes of iron upon our neck until he have destroyed us, until he have totally taken away our identity, totally taken away our resolve and will to really fight back, right, and subdued us in such a manner that we become good worker bees, so to speak, right, to support them in their ways. And in many ways, many of our people wind up being just like them because of that assimilation aspect, right? That's another piece we spoke about, that almost all of these revolutionary groups that we've gone over the months on this show, all of them had a edict or a mission statement that involved anti-assimilation in an attempt to try to keep and maintain their culture. You got a scripture you want to bring up?
I was just thinking of Daniel 7:25 when you were talking about how they wore us out, you know?
Okay.
I was comparing that to the scripture you brought out in Deuteronomy.
Okay. Did you want to read that and say something?
I got it. You want me to read it?
Well, listen, I got y'all here.
Yeah,
all right.
Sure. Read it.
My co-host is not here. So y'all not just readers. You co-host too.
Right.
All right.
Daniel chapter 7, verse 25.
The book of Daniel, chapter 7, verse 25. Then King Darius wrote unto all people.
Daniel 7.
Oh, I'm sorry. Daniel 7, verse 25. And he shall speak great words against the Most High.
So he is the seven heads, like the captain was bringing out. He's the one that's going to speak great words against the Most High. Go ahead.
And shall wear out the saints of the Most High.
That's the part I wanted. The wearing out of the saints is the debilitation of our people, no matter where we are at, because we are the salt of the earth. But he comes into our land and he robs all the resources and he sets up systems in place that make it impossible for us to show that salt, to show how great we are. And it also goes into Romans 8 and 19, where it talks about the whole the earnest expectation of the whole creature.
Oh, you get is, if you bring that out, you're gonna make me bring out what I was bringing out on New Moon, bro.
The manifestation. Oh, you're
right.
you're gonna bring out a class.
Bring it out, Kev. I'm planning on doing a class on it. I know. I was going over some stuff with that, and that's one of my favorite scriptures, also Romans 8 19, like one of my all time favorites, and. Romans, the 8th chapter, all the way down to the end of that, from like 19 on, is heavy, heavy, heavy stuff. That is one of my favorites always. But yeah, good point that you're bringing out with that. All right, let's go back to the book, page 125. Okay, so before we get back into the article, so it says, I'm going to read the highlighted part first. It says, the upheavals of the post-Trujillo era had turned Dominicans into the most radical group of Spanish-speaking immigrants in U.S. history. Meaning, when they got here, there was a perfect, so-called perfect storm. There was a bunch of ingredients, a bunch of factors that made it that way for them. And mainly, and it's interesting because you see this dynamic now with what's going on down with, you have, it's mostly Haitians down in Del Rio, right. Texas, right? Is it Del Rio,
yeah.
I think?
Yeah.
That they're all under the bridge. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Bishop Nathaniel this weekend and the bishops, Bishop Yasso, Bishop Kanai, we were just talking. And I said, man, you notice that they always put us under bridges, right? Like when the Cuban refugees came here, the Freedom Towns, we went over that on the show. We even showed pictures of it. They were under bridges in Miami. Like I don't know what it is about a bridge. They're like I told myself, like we're trolls or something. Like trolls are supposed to be under bridges.
Right.
And they always throwing them under bridges. They put them in pens under bridges, right? And the same way they're not getting that refugee status, it's the same thing that happened when Dominicans came over, all right, during that time. The only ones who got some benefit and for a point, right, remember we spoke about through the 60s and 70s, was Manessa, which are the Cubans. Because at that time, in the height of Fidel Castro coming to power, it met their agenda, it met their ideals, so they wound up giving them refugee status, and they gave them a lot of benefits. So remember, we highlighted this on the show as the different waves of Cuban immigrants that came, and what was so important about the contrast of those first ones that came is that they have a different view of America because America hand-fed them. So a gift destroyed of the heart, the scripture tells you.
Yeah.
So they didn't have the heart to fight back or be radical, right? And we also brought out how a lot of those Cubans that are in office, like Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and there's others, those are the second, third generation descendants of those refugees that came in the 60s and 70s.
Right. First wave.
That first wave that got all those benefits. Mm-hmm. So what happened is when you get these other waves that come and they don't get the same benefits, they have to what? Do for themselves, right? And then they also wind up getting a different taste in their mouth of what this country is really like. So the reason Dominicans wound up being the most radical we spoke about is because, you know, they experienced a lot of racism and even colorism amongst the Puerto Ricans that they came into in those areas that were there, right? So it likens them. It says they were akin to the Russian workers who reached the United States after the failed 1905 revolution, or the Italian anarcho-syndicalist immigrants of the 1920s. So he's trying to make immigration similarities with these people. Now, we know that it's not really akin to that, because at the end of the day, because of their so-called whiteness, so to speak,
right,
they were always in a position to have more benefits, right? White privilege is a very real thing. So it says many joined branches of political parties opposed to the Balaguer regime as soon as they arrived. By early 1970, some young Dominicans, following the example of Puerto Ricans who founded the Young Lords, started their own radical organization. It was called El Comité, and it was spearheaded a large tenant squatters movement on the Upper West Side against New York's urban renewal program, which was then gutting and demolishing low-rent tenements to make way for middle-income housing. So that gentrification process was going on.
Right.
Is that all you're going to say? Excuse me. I'm drinking water. You guys.
I heard that, too. I was looking at the rest of Daniel 7 to 25, and it says...
You just going to change the subject?
No, I'm on the same subject. Okay, it says, I think to change times and laws, that's how it was going to wear out the saints of the Most High, wear us out, right, putting us in hoods and projects, forcing us to... What does the scripture say if you don't have jobs or whatnot? Not giving us jobs. If you don't have jobs, you're going to steal.
Yeah, no, you know? Yeah. So when you talk about wearing out, there's a lot that goes with it, right? The first thing is slavery.
Cover shame, yeah.
It starts with that physical hard bondage that they put in, right? Wear you out. Then when the slavery became without the chains, right, they had the black codes. They had Jim Crow, right?
Right.
Captain Aparin went over on the show. Puerto Ricans were subject to Jim Crow and the black codes as well. Puerto Ricans came later, so it was Jim Crow. But natives also fell under that. Mexicans fell under that, right? So a lot of times we talk about those things, and there's a bigger history there where so-called Northern Kingdom or so-called Latinos were also seen the same way. Excuse me. And they were subject to those things as well. So the wearing out has a lot to do, even now they're still wearing us out with feminism.
Right.
All right. Yeah. With this LGBTQ movement. All right.
Right.
With politics.
Drugs.
With drugs, alcohol, right? School systems, right?
And all of these go against the laws of the Most High, right?
All of them go against the laws of the Most High, not in its structure, right? We have an education system.
Right.
We have rules on marriage and divine order. Drugs, alcohol, adulteries and whoremongering, right? And making us desensitized to those things.
Right.
All of these are methods of wearing us out, and they wind up putting us in a frame of mind where we're not looking for the Lord. We're not seeking this. And it goes with that Judith 5 about
right.
that if we're not doing God's will, if we're not keeping the commandments, then they can maintain that perpetual dominance over us, right?
Right?
Although it's a fixed fight. We know there's a remnant that will wake up no matter how
right.
maddening, how no matter how tragic it is what we see going on with our people, we know that it's not like they can't stop it, even though they think they are, but they right. do everything in their power to try to. You had something you want to bring up? I see
possible.
You turning pages, brothers. It's all right. Bring it out.
What you want? I got you.
Okay. Don't be nervous. Bring it up.
Give me Jeremiah 50 and 33.
Bring it up.
You got to talk, though, while I find it. 50, 33?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yes, sir.
The book of Jeremiah, chapter 50, verse 33. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the children of Israel and the children of Judah were oppressed together.
So it says the children of Israel, which is the northern kingdom, and the children of Judah, which is the southern kingdom, were oppressed together. Just like you said, Cap, we all went through those same things.
Right, right.
And all that took them captives held them fast.
And they still got us to this day.
Right.
Right. And part of the reason that they hold us fast, see, it doesn't tell you the method as to how they hold us fast.
Right.
It's that wearing us out.
Sir.
It's all those different things, right? Politics, Christianity, the school system, right?
Social structures.
Which is supposed to be for education, but it's really goes into that assimilation. It's an indoctrination system.
Conflict
right?
leasing.
Right. All these different things, and we can go on and on with the list, are those things that keep us worn out, and they continue to wear us out. Our only rejuvenation, the only thing that helps, because if something's worn out, it needs to be built back up,
yes, sir.
Is these law, statutes, and commandments. It's this Bible. This is why repentance is so heavy. This is why, listen, it's by design that anybody who teaches Christianity to you tells you that the laws are done away with. Mm-hmm. Like when you start to understand the history, let's just read Judah 5, 20. Is it, we start at 20 or 21?
20.
Because I want to make a point of that. You have to understand that why, I want to make a point as to why, it's not a coincidence that the doctrine of Christianity is based on not keeping any laws and politics, right? And then all those social constructs under that deal with that. Right. And this, we're still dealing with the radicalism of the Dominicans and how they came
right.
here and did that stuff. We're going to jump right back into that. Judith 5 and let's start at 20.
This is the book of Judith, chapter 5 and verse 20. Now, therefore, my Lord and Governor, if there be any error in this people and they sin against their God, let us consider that this shall be their ruin.
This, they know this. Remember, Satan knew the Bible. He quoted scripture to Christ. And Satan is their master, their ruler. You read in Romans 13 that it talks about the powers that be,
right.
and it says that they're ministers of God, right, for our destruction if you do wrong. When you go into that, if you think about that whole concept and understanding Job, how Satan had to get permission from God to do what he did, right? So God at the end of the day is over all this.
Right.
But their sole purpose in their creation was to be our tormentors.
Mm-hmm. Keep us
That's
in sin.
It. Mm-hmm. That's it. And there's no purpose for them after that. Right? Moab, they tell you they're our washpot, right? The other nations will be our servants, our possessions, right? And then the Most High is so magnificent in his recompense that he's going to do for us, that not only is he going to make them suffer, right, horribly, he's also going to put them in a magnified hard bondage, right? Magnified, because it says double, right?
All
fill
places.
Them up double.
Yes, sir.
Right. He's going to magnify the same bondage they had us in, right? So all of that is set up by design, but here you're reading that they understand this from this time, that this was going to be the tactic that was going to help them maintain that rule, not let us go, right? Mm-hmm. And over history, in their evilness, in their infinite evilness, in their infinite diabolical minds, they came up with more and more effective ways where it went less from physical mm-hmm. and more to psychologically breaking us down and destroying us as a people. Because at the end of it, and it goes to the Willie Lynch, mm-hmm. and they, you know, some people say that's fiction, there was no guy in history. Listen, whether it was fiction or not,
it's the truth.
It's the truth.
Right.
Yes, sir.
And it doesn't matter if it was fiction or not because they used it anyway.
Right.
Whether a Willie Lynch existed or not, they still – so Willie Lynch could have been Tom Brady or Joseph Smith or whoever else, right? Could have been somebody else if they say that. Because I was reading something like that the other day. Oh, he didn't exist or whatever. That you know what that is? That's like what we were talking about. That's deflection, misdirection.
Right.
When we're talking about the Prestige, when I brought out my example, that movie, The Prestige.
Right.
That's misdirection because they get you thinking about whether or not that guy actually existed. And you take your eye off of whether or not that was actually implemented, regardless of who wrote it or said it.
Wow.
And it most surely was, and it most certainly is. But I'm telling you, their levels of evilness, well, it says they're wiser than Daniel. They do a diligent search.
Right.
So they know these scriptures, and they know the things that will destroy us. And they perfected that keeping us away from God's commandments in the form of Christianity and politics.
Right.
And everything stems from that. All these other social constructs, even other denominations, they're just bastards of what's known as Christianity.
Right?
So even when you're dealing with Islam, Buddhism, all the other denominations under Christianity that are out there, whatever it might be, it's just bastardized version. Because you know why I say they're bastardized version of Christianity? Because every single one of them gives provision for sin.
Right. Yep.
Every single one of them has that in common. You can go and join all those other religions, and they provide provisions for the flesh, provisions for sin, justifications for being in sin. So at the end of the day, so what they did was they said, damn, they might get bored of vanilla. Let's do chocolate. They might get bored of chocolate. Let's do strawberries. Baskin Robbins. Religion is like 31 flavors. And then even in politics, they did that. Because, right, there's mainly a two-party system here, right?
Right.
Democrat and Republican. But then what do? Well, you're a moderate. You're a far right. You're a far left. Yeah. You're a leaning right. You're a leaning left.
You're a
moderate. You're a liberal. You're a conservative.
Right.
You're a moderate liberal. You're a progressive.
Right.
They always throw flavors in it to fit your lust.
Right.
To fit your lust. And the Bible is a straight way. It's a narrow gate. Mm-hmm. And because everything around us in the world tells you variety is the spice of life, right? Have you heard that saying?
Yes, sir.
The majority of our people shy away from this, and they focus on that. But let me get back to this. So read verse 20 again.
Book of Judah, chapter 5 and verse 20. Now, therefore, my Lord and Governor, if there be any error in this people.
Error is sin. If there be any sin in this people, come on.
And they sin against their God, let us consider that this shall be their ruin.
It says, sin will be their ruin.
Right.
Bro, they knew that. That means they read Deuteronomy 28, 15 through 68. They understood that. Because that's where it's explained to us in great detail that sin would be our ruin and what specifically would happen to us.
Right.
Come on.
And let us go up, and we shall overcome them.
The force fields are down, right? We can attack them. They don't have their armor on. They asleep at the wheel. We can overcome them. On the contrary side, go ahead.
Verse 21. But if there be no iniquity in their nation, let my Lord now pass by, lest their Lord defend them.
And you know why they said that? Because they've seen those things. They read where Elijah was able to show all the chariots that were with us. There's more with us than are with them. They read how the Most High held still the sun by Joshua's prayer so that they can overtake them in the land of Canaan, right? They read how we marched around Jericho and the city fell. They knew that. So they said, listen, if they in the right spirit, they are unstoppable. They are invincible.
That's right.
Come on.
And their God be for them, and we become a reproach before all the world.
Hey, and that last part, where it says, and we become a reproach before all the world, lets you know, I'm telling you, they know this Bible inside out. They just won't teach it to us the right way. They had to learn it that way to know what not to teach us, to learn how to construct all these religions, to learn how to construct all these politics, because they know that their end is to be a reproach. They know that their end is for people to say, is this the man that did it shake nations, right?
Yes, sir.
They're going to nary look at him and say, is this that guy? Because he's going to be a reproach. They know all those scriptures. They know the ones that are for our prosperity, and they know the ones that are for their destruction. They understand that this Bible is for us, by us, and only for us, and what it says about them and their prophecy. So they've set this up. They've set this up in a manner that they can go ahead and they said, listen, how are we going to wear them out? How are we going to do this stuff? Let's do Christianity. And that's why Christianity harps so much on not keeping any laws. That's why you have these apologist groups and all these other Christian groups. What do they attack with us? It's always the law. They might mention some things here or there, but what they focus on and their ire towards us and even our own people is because we're keeping God's commandments.
That's right. I don't got to wear fringes. I don't need to grow my beard.
Hey, it's so bad. It's like the Matrix where they made them agents. They made any one of our people even to be agents to pop up and tell you why you're keeping the commandments.
Right.
I'll tell you, I'll never forget it, man. There's one time we in camp. There's when we were doing Southern Boulevard in the Bronx. Deacon Nathan was teaching, and he says, he's talking to a sister, man. Boom, boom, giving her the history, the curses, right? He said, damn, okay, all right. Yeah, yeah. She's like, damn, why do people hate y'all so much? He said, I'm going to show you why they hate us so much. Give me Deuteronomy 22 and 5. Sister ran off, cursed them out, and ran the hell off.
I actually seen that video.
He did. Yes, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm talking about. Ran the hell off after that. Because the William Lynch, starting with that doctrine, and they've perfected that, and that goes into the wearing us out, all right? They wear us out. It started with physical hard bondage, and it progressed to all these tactics that they have to keep us in this perpetual state of waste.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Of weariness, right? This is why when you read in Matthew, when it talks about the poor in spirit, right? Mm-hmm. Blessed are they, right? And all this, because that's us. Because these commandments are nourishment. You know how you got to feed these carnal bodies?
Right.
Well, this is why you got to feed the spiritual.
That's right.
That's why Christ told Satan in the wilderness, man shall not live by bread alone.
That's right.
You need to feed your spirit with this. And you've seen that. And it works. Because look at what we've done as an organized nation. Look at what we've done. Speaking of radical groups and organizing.
Right.
The milestones and the steps that we've been able to take.
All praise the Lord.
You know we're doing something right. They're very scared. Like even at First Friday, we'll have heathens coming up to us and they're a little religious. You guys are a hate group. This, that, and the third following us. Like, bro, you're a stalker. Bro, Christ did not follow.
And you know how you
Pharisees?
Know it's BS. Yeah. They don't care that you say that the white man's the devil and that they're not for us because they're all for that. It's like that dude, Richard Spencer, bro. I forget that interview he was doing, and. I think it was Charles Barkley, and I forget the other guy's name that was with him. I always forget the other guy's name. And they were, like, taken aback by Richard Spencer because they were like, but we want the same things you want. We want families. We want community. We want all that. He goes, and you guys can have that. This is the Edomite, says mm-hmm. Richard Spencer. He goes, just separate.
Right.
Just don't have that amongst us.
In the projects.
You can have that where you're at, right? He says, you can have that over there. So I bring that point out to say, they know that it's not about a hate group, right? Remember, they do a diligent search in our scriptures, okay? I just explained that to y'all, right? It's the commandments that they don't like because even in their spirit, damn, where's that one in Job where it says their iniquities in their bones? It's like you can have somebody that's a lower level Edomite. What I mean lower level is that
Joe Dirt.
Yeah, Amariah knows which one I'm talking about, I'm sure. He gonna text it, but he... You know, damn, I always forget where it is.
We got to step it up. Joel 29.
Is that it? Let me see. Did he send it to you or you knew where it was?
Nah, I'm over there.
I'm in my Bible app.
I think you're right. Okay, yeah, just start Job 20, and let me see where I want to start. Let's start at verse 4. I'm going to start all the way up at 4. All right?
Oh, you know what? I'm mistaken. I don't think that's right.
This is the book of Job, chapter 20 and verse 4.
Bring it out!
Knowest thou not this of old, since man was placed upon earth?
The end from the beginning. All right? This history was planned out. The Most High has this thing planned out. There's no chance. There's no happenstance. What we don't understand and what's revealed in part, like the scripture explains to us, right? It says we see through a glass darkly, we prophesy in part. What's revealed in part is the in-between. But the beginning and the end, that's set. We know that. Our enemies know that, right? So he says, knowest thou not this of old, since man was placed upon earth? Come on.
That the triumphing of the wicked is short.
Their time is short. Though it seem long, though it tarry, wait for it. Their time is short. Triumphing of the wicked is short. Because right now they are in triumph. Right now earth is given into the hands of the wicked. But we best believe, brothers and sisters, their time is short. Come on.
And the joy of the hypocrite but for a moment.
Right. And the joy of the hypocrite but for a moment. Hey, that's going into our people. That makes you a hypocrite if you're on their agenda. Right.
Yes, sir.
But you're talking and acting and you're our people, but you're talking and acting like them. All right. And he says, and the joy of the hypocrite, but for a moment. That's those of our people that support that stuff. Those are our people into that Christianity and stuff like that. Come on.
Verse 6. Though his excellency mount up to the heavens.
Space travel, right? All his accomplishments that he's done. Though this wicked excellency mount up to the heavens. Come on.
And his head reach unto the clouds.
That goes with Isaiah 14 when it talks about the flight, when it talks about going into space. Come on.
Yet he shall perish forever. Like his own dung.
He gonna be like his own nasty doodle. It says, though you see all this, you best believe it, brothers and sisters. He will perish like his own dung. Come on.
They which have seen him shall say, where is he?
That's the same thing like when we read where it says, they which will see him will say, is this the man?
Yeah.
Is this that one?
He looks like dude.
Right? Come on.
Verse 8. He shall fly away as a dream. And shall not be found.
And he knows that. He knows that that his end. Why do you think he's so obsessed with making a name? You ever see all these movies, these historical movies about these historical Edomites? I want my name to be remembered forever. Oh, I'm going to go to the gates of Valhalla. Troy. What was that whole movie Troy about? Achilles wanted a name. You will be forgotten, he told Hector. Oh, and that's why you will be forgotten. I will be remembered in history because it's in their spirit that they know that they're going to be gone. What that's telling you is that after they're destroyed, after they serve in bondage and they're wiped off the face of the earth, nobody's even going to remember them. And that's painful for them. That's dreadful. That's their worst damn nightmare. Come on.
Yea, he shall be chased away as a vision of the night.
Right. So like, you know, when you wake up and it's like you had a dream and like, it starts to escape you no matter what, right? Some people like to write it down, and you just like you can't remember it, right? You're like, damn, I want to remember this dream. Damn, I knew I had some crazy dreams last night. What were they about? I have no idea. Right. I just knew they were wild. Right? I had some crazy dreams. Come on.
The eye also which saw him shall see him no more.
That's going into telling you, gone. It wiped from existence. Erased. Come on.
Neither shall his place any more behold him.
Right? Come on.
His children shall seek to please the poor, and his hand shall restore their goods.
Right? It says his children shall seek to please the poor, and his hand shall restore their goods. Going into, right, we had times when he had to go into the Caucasus Mountains, right, and then came back up in the Renaissance, right? So he's letting you know what? That his hand shall restore their goods. Read on. I'm sorry. Is going into the kingdom.
Right.
All right. I apologize. Is going into the kingdom. His children shall seek to please the poor. We are that poor in
That's
spirit.
Right.
So when it talks about that, the gates are going to always be open. They're going to bring their forces unto us. All right. Come on.
Verse 11. His bones are full of the sin of his youth.
Hey, and that second part, his hands shall restore their goods. When you read those scriptures in Isaiah and in Revelations that talk about they're going to bring the forces in, it's talking about the stuff they stole from us. They're basically going to restore to us. So that's when it says his hands will restore their goods. Right. Everything they robbed and stole from us, they're going to give it back. But notice, this is where it jumps, and it says his children. This goes more deeper in when they try to tell you, that wasn't me, I didn't do that, yeah. Right? Come on. Yeah.
Verse 11, his bones are full of the sin of his
youth.
That's
the point that I wanted. It says his bones are full of the sin of his youth, meaning it's in him. That's why when they say this, oh, but what about the good white? There are no good white
That's
people.
Right.
No matter how nice they are, no matter how much they might be a friend of the mammon in the moment, don't get fooled or deceived by that. It says his bones are full of the sin of his youth. The sin of his youth is talking about from that serpent in the garden. From that time to Cain to that vagabond that he is in all his iterations. So when he tried to change his name to be the Greeks, the Russians, everything else that he wanted to be, they're all Edomite races. It says his bones are full. It's coded into the essence of who he is. They're full of the sins of his youth. Come on.
which shall lie down with him in the dust.
And it's going to go down into the dust. Hey, that's like that in Man of Steel when the Codex was in the skull. Right, and that was supposed to be all the history of Krypton and stuff like that.
Right.
It's basically saying all that information is stored in their DNA. Right? We were watching something again this weekend when I was sitting with Bishop that Deacon Abiel brought out about CRISPR, and it's this DNA coding thing and stuff like that. And we didn't get to finish it. We were watching. It's crazy. It's on Netflix. I think it's called Unnatural Selection. And, bro, these dudes are so wild. They're doing DNA experiments, like, in their backyards and their garages, bro.
Wow.
This stuff, you think of a lab and stuff like that. Like, so Deacon Abiel was trying to show us that piece. But now I just thought about this when it talks about this stuff being in his bones, right? And it'll lie die with him. Their DNA, bro, they were talking about, like, how unique it is and how it passes on. So I was talking a little bit about intelligent design, and I was saying that as I learn all this stuff, it doesn't pull me more away from the truth. It makes me realize even more that there is a higher power, right? Because of how complex we are and how we're created. So it made me think of that CRISPR thing. This is going into that. So through every generation, that thing is passed on to them.
Right.
Even if they're not exposed to that mindset, something in them, in their genetic makeup, mm-hmm. makes them that way. Why do you think from the freaking womb, right, they were fighting with each other?
Right.
Who you think started that thing? Esau.
Right.
And they was going at it in there, right? So it's from there that they're meant to be against us.
Right.
They're meant to be against us in that way. So it says this thing is in their bones. Come on.
Verse 12. Though wickedness be sweet in his mouth, though he hide it under his tongue.
You know how he hides it under his tongue? Politics, Christianity, the school system, all these other things, right? These elected officials saying, yes, we're going to, when they're pandering for our vote, all the different things that they're going to do.
Right, right.
Tell me if Biden did anything so far that he said he was going to do for the people. Or anybody before him. Anybody before him, right? Obama too, right? He looked like us, right?
Right.
Talking like them, like Trick Baby, not Trick Daddy. Brothers would let me say Trick Daddy for weeks whenever I would bring that up. Like
potato,
that movie Trick Baby.
He a potato. He's brown on the outside, but white.
Right.
Right.
We say coconut. Brown on the outside, white on the inside. You say
Oreo.
Potato.
Oreo.
Right. Oreo. Right. So it says he hide it under his tongue. He hide it under his tongue with things like Willie Lynch, with things like Christianity. This goes into all the wearing away. Come on.
Verse 13. Though he spare it and forsake it not.
So it says he spare it, meaning, you know how they say you use something sparingly? Mm-hmm. So when he's in circles around you, he'll talk a certain way, he'll act a certain way.
Right.
But when he's amongst all those that are like-minded with him, right? He's gonna really bring it out. Because he says, though he spare it and forsake it not. So around us, they will speak a certain way and act a certain way and say, you're my brother and let's be united. But they say he don't forsake it. Don't let that fool you. So if you come across one that speaks nice and acts nice, and I've never had a problem with any of them, it is not forsaken because it's in his bones. He can't be anything else. Come on.
In his mouth.
But keep it still within his mouth. All right? I'm not going to keep going into that. That's all I want to know. You were going to say something? You look like you were anxious to say something.
It reminded me of this comedy sketch with Martin Lawrence. When he said, it's funny how like white people, or we know him as Esau, their real name, Esau gets funky with you when it's a bunch of them around and it's just you. He's like, he's coming in to ask about like toothpaste into the store, like where's the toothpaste at? And he's like, oh my gosh, it says toothpaste right above in the aisle. Just look up, you know, and then if it's a bunch of Jake in there, then they're like, hey, let me look for it for you. Let me show you where it's at, you know. Let me go to the aisle. What do you want? Crest? You want a plaque removal? What do you want?
Bruh.
It just made me think of that scene.
Hey, Cap,
you crazy, man.
It reminded me of a video I seen this week. I think Captain Gedaliah put it on his show last week of that little Edomite boy talking about how he wants to be a murderer.
Oh,
when I grow up, I'm going to be a killer.
I've seen that video.
My brain tells me that I should kill every bro.
Right.
So
I've seen that. Hey, sister said, but he's a Hamite. I guess she's referring to Obama. Sis, we don't know. At that time, when he first got elected, we were saying that. With the understanding we have now, depending on where his pops was from, and that, he might have been our people. But I've often said this. What good is he being our people if, for every intent and purpose, he has the mind of our oppressor?
That's right!
So that's like in the scripture. There's a scripture where it talks where it says to be like Edom. I think when it goes into hatred, I'm losing it right now. But,
it be not though.
No, but it says
Hebrews,
like Esau.
Hebrews 12, where it says a fornicator like Esau.
Oh. Yeah, a fornicator like Esau, right? So if he's not a Hamite, he's basically Esau because he has their mind, right? He has their sense made up. So, you know, I just say now with the way the waters have risen, we don't want to just go out and say he's Ham. I think some stuff came out that he might be our people, but what's the matter if he's not for us, right? So it really don't matter. And someone says, so that's what's in that vaccine to make us forget. Listen, who knows what the hell is in that damn vaccine, all right? I'll tell you what. I was talking to the brothers here again on New Moon, and I was just going over Psalms 91. And Bishop Nathaniel said it when he taught this past Sabbath. And he said, what power do we have anyway for us to be obsessed with the vaccine at this point?
Right.
Listen, I'm going to tell y'all just get your spirits ready because they have ultimate power on the earth. And it's only a matter of time before all of us are likely to have to wind up taking that thing, right. You know? Lord's will, that's not the case. Lord's will, that's not the case. But whatever their agenda is behind it, don't matter.
Right.
Because it says, those who reside in the secret place of the Most High, we have his protection. Right. What's that secret place? There's proper understanding in these scriptures.
Bring it out.
There's proper understanding. Me, I don't obsess over that. A lot of us in leadership, we nary talk about that. It'll come up because we're dealing with Esau's devices.
Right.
But we did that thing already. We know that they're going to keep pushing it. But the news, they always posting freaking, oh, this one said she wish. This one died. She said she wished she would have got the vaccine. This one died. She said she would have got the vaccine.
I have some clients, you know, that they jump in my car sometimes. And they say, you know, are you vaccinated? And I'm like, yes. I got
you
the
just
measles.
Tell them so you don't lose business, right?
No, I'm vaccinated. I got the measles.
With the scriptures.
Up. Oh, you tell them like that.
Yeah, they don't know.
Right, right. Hey, I'm going to use that right now. You ain't lying. Are you vaccinated? Right. I sure am.
Yes.
They didn't ask against what.
Most guys told us to be wise as a serpent.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I
that
mean?
Video that Moabite posted, I identify as being vaccinated.
I identify as being
right.
Vaccinated, right? You don't got to explain all that. Are you vaccinated? Yep.
My pronouns are vaccinated. Or V.
Yeah, man.
Got mine years ago.
Yep. But hey, and listen, I'll tell you another reason that it's the vaccine isn't there for us to forget stuff. They have Christianity. That's the strongest crack in the earth for our people. So that thing has made us forget. So they don't need a vaccine to help us forget. You know
right.
What I'm saying? They got us with Christianity. Anyway, let me get back to the
book.
Okay. You didn't have to announce that to the whole radio show though. You could have just got up and left. And let us know that you were going.
What the hell is
my
this?
Man said, all on the mic, I'm going to the bathroom really quick. Thanks, Officer Isaac. Yeah. Everybody watching knows you're going to the bathroom now.
Hell no.
Who raised you?
Who raised you? Damn, just be discreet. Oh, man. Let's go back to page 125 in the book. There, was that him out there? He's like, stop. Oh, man. So we were talking about El Comité, right? And it says, and it spearheaded a large tenant squatters movement of the Upper West Side against New York's new urban renewal program, which was then gutting and demolishing low-rent tenements to make way for middle-income housing. The campaign against urban renewal failed as the city's brash and ambitious relocation commissioner under Mayor Lindsay, Germán Badillo, systematically demolished hundreds of Upper West Side tenements and single-room occupancy hotels and pushed the low-income Puerto Ricans up to the South Bronx and the Dominicans to Northern Manhattan. So in New York, if you're familiar with New York or you're from New York, all right, they call the South Bronx Little Puerto Rico. That's what it grew up on. They call it Little PR. And they call Northern Manhattan Washington Heights, all right, or Little DR. Washington Heights is known as Little DR. They're telling you why we wound up being geographically like that. We actually were deeper into Manhattan, wasn't just the South Bronx and so on. But because of this particular dispute that the Tribe of Simeon was fighting against, all right, we wound up getting pushed into those areas. So Ephraim wound up going further north, right, and then Simeon was right below us because Washington Heights is right there. So, like, you can literally walk across a little bridge and you're in Washington Heights from the South Bronx. So it, like, borders Like, there's several points where you can do that. Bishop Yossum know what I'm talking about. He lived up in those parts and stuff like that, so he knows that connection out there. He actually sent me some interesting stuff this week. He was catching up on last week's show when we were talking about how Judah and Ephraim in New York, at least in that Northeast Corridor, were always tight. And he was showing me some stuff with this festival they had out there. And he says he remembers that a lot of Ephraim was in there. Like, they build it as a black, you know, gathering of unity. But he said Ephraim and Simeon were in the mix there with them as well. And very oftentimes, and it's by design, by reporting, unless you still know people who were there or are familiar with those times, they don't realize that we were in those fights together, you know. Even in the documentary we were watching, Jesse Jackson even said it, of all people, when he found out when we were talking about Mexico and their, you know, their rights. And he said, hey, he goes, while we were picking cotton, they were picking tomatoes or whatever. You take it a step further, you brought out we were oppressed together. We were picking cotton with them too, Gad and everything else. We were doing, you know, it wasn't as predominant. And again, the people who write this history, it's not our people. Our people couldn't write in slavery. Our people couldn't read in slavery. So when you read accounts of slavery, that's why I guarantee you it's far worse than what was than what you read and what you see on television.
That's the little
far worse.
Yeah.
Because there's no accounts that we wrote of it. There are no accounts of that. Usually they'll say, oh, it was somebody orally, and so who do they orate it to?
Right.
They ordered it to a white man that if it don't sound right, they took it away.
Right. They edited it.
They edited it out. Right? This has been edited for television, right? You know, because of certain content or whatever. You read those things. They did that when they write that. So even our history in captivity is largely coded.
It's a good word.
Sugar-coated. Sugar-coated. So, you know, you read that stuff and you just got to think in your mind it's worse than that. And that's why when you read stuff like Bartolome de las Casas, where he talks about them smashing babies, throwing the babies to the dogs, people say, no, that didn't happen.
Right. Or when the bishop brought out that derby dose.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, you got gator baby, gator bait, all that. Come on. I mean, bro, they did all types of crazy stuff to us. And I'll tell you, a lot of times you read that stuff, they don't talk about the medical experiments they've done on us. Right. I mean, we always talk about Tuskegee and what's the sister?
Hottentot Princess.
Yeah, what's her name, though?
I'm not sure.
The big sister, man. Y'all should know that she had the big behind or whatever that they paraded her around.
Yeah,
the one that they had in the museum. Yep. Oh, wow. They got her.
Was it Harriet? No.
They'll talk about that, but they don't talk about, bro, you know, they were obsessed with our private parts,
right?
They were obsessed with all that stuff. They'd be like, damn, how these dudes have so many babies? How they, you know what I'm saying? How they look like they do? They're, you know, and I'm not just talking about size of endowment and stuff. They saw that we were superior.
Sarah Bartman.
Yep. They saw that we were superior. Bro, the way that we were able to produce and work, their people couldn't stand in the fields or like all day like that.
Right.
Bro, our sisters was working in the fields, popping out a baby, wrap them in a blanket, throw them over the shoulder, and finish the shift. Mm-hmm. Tell you, I've said this before. I'm not going to get on the sisters. The sisters now be like, oh, I'm pregnant. I can't do nothing for a month.
The hell is this?
Right? Oh, come on, man. Get out of here. Our sisters was hardy, right? Read that in Exodus. Right? They were able to deliver their own babies.
The Hebrew women are more lively.
Right. So, right. Hey, that's a good point. We don't know the depth of what they did to us, Jabari said. Don't matter what the history books and stuff say, right? That's why the Most High says he has to pour out his fury on them. Right? Remember how Bishop was saying God's going to get the first salvo, and then we're going to come behind that, right? And I tell you, boy, when I look at it like this. When he says his fury and his revenge, he's going to activate every life and everything we witnessed and every atrocity we've ever, right? And it's not going to be traumatic because when it's done, it says, we just read how it's going to be like a dream. They're going to be gone, right? But in that moment, for us to get that angry, for us to get that upset to do what's needed to be done, we ain't that angry. Going into the thing that I started with, the pollutions of the world, even us in this walk, we're polluted. Right. That's why Paul says you die daily. Right. I'm not making that up. None of us is perfect in this. First John tells you he who says without sin, you deceive yourself. Right.
Right.
None of us is perfect in this. Not a one. But he's going to have to put that in our spirit to do those type of things in that second salvo. That's why it says his fury, his revenge. So all those things that history hasn't told us, this is just my opinion of it. When it says his fury, his revenge, he's going to put all that into our remembrance and all those regenerations that we had where we're going to see our wives and our children being raped and dismembered and all that stuff. And that's going to give us the fuel to do what needs to be done to cleanse this earth. That's basically what's going to happen.
All praises.
To dash a little one against
the
stone.
To dash a little. Hey, the scripture tell you that we're going to dash dead little ones just like they did ours. Right? Hey, I always say that, bro. If there's a crazy brother out there now that think they could take a baby and bash him against a stone,
yeah,
watch
wild,
him.
Bro.
Watch him.
Chill out, bro.
I don't think any of us is that angry yet.
Not yet. No,
that's a level that you got to be.
Supernatural.
Right. And it ain't just one.
You need permission.
I mean, you're
going to
be going
through
like, you know.
Right.
Yeah, man. So.
That's heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how we got pushed up to the South Bronx and Dominicans to Northern Manhattan. All right. So let's finish reading this article, then I'll jump back to the book. So let's go to the article. And we still all on the same topic. It's just this stuff is inspiring certain things to come out. So that's the spirit moving in certain things.
Right. Same impression.
Is that where I was? Pick something and figured I won't remember, so I'll just read from there. All right. The Comité was not formed with a revolutionary ethos or political ideology, like, say, the New York chapter of the Young Lords. Some members were slightly older, first or second generation Puerto Ricans, Vietnam veterans, unemployed laborers, factory workers, etc. Others had young families, while most had virtually no experience with community organizing and only limited experience of radical politics. You know, this is such a strong example because, you know, some of our people will kind of be like, yeah, but I don't come from a walk like that. I don't know. But listen, I was not the one to be out there teaching in camp, none of that stuff. I'm not saying I was a pussycat, but the stuff I'm doing now, the places I'm going now, the things I'm doing now for the Most High and for my people, I didn't have any background or experience with that. I was grown. I was responsible. I had certain things, but I didn't really become a man the way the Bible says become a man until I started to really live these commandments. And it tells you here, like when you're driven with something, when a vision is painted, because without the Bible, these people were able to organize from all these different backgrounds, right? Be galvanized, come together and do something for their community. So it's not, we can't discount what these groups did.
Right.
Their heart was in the right place, and even their hands were, because they took action on certain things rather than just talking about
it. Zeal.
Right. We just know that it wasn't according to the scriptures. So it's interesting that they tell you that, you know, so many of them had no background in this stuff, but they were so driven that we're reading about them on a show now that history is being written about, has been written about them because of those actions. It's kind of like when Moses was like, yo, I'm too old. Moses, I said, bro, you better get yourself together, bro. I'm calling you regardless, right? None of us should be that. But I've met brothers that would be like, yo, I don't want to do what y'all do, but I want to contribute, right? And that's, hey, listen, some brothers, that's not their role. They're not going to be on the front line. They're not going to do that. But some of those same brothers who said that are some of the better teachers in the nation right now, right? And if you stick with the program, which is ultimately God's program, right? All the stuff we do in IUIC, it's all driven by the Spirit of the Most High, right?
Yes, sir.
It filters down through the bishops and the deacons, the captains, the leadership. If you stick to that program, all right, you're going to be able to be developed. The manifestation of the Spirit that's given to you is going to come about. Right? Remember, I said I've been working on a class for that, too. I got so many class topics lately in my mind. No, I gotta bring it out. But the scripture tells you the manifestation of the Spirit is given to everyone individually to profit with all. You just have to wait on that manifestation.
Right.
But the way that manifestation comes about is by following that program.
Right.
Starts with the vision first, right? Because remember, we're wasted away, so we're wearied. All right, in our spirit. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to visualize that thing first, right?
Right.
And that's what starts. That's why we start with that identity when we out there teaching on the street, right? You start with that. You say, hey, you're not nothing. You're not nobody. Because listen, even people who walk around and they're proud Puerto Ricans waving their flag, proud Dominicans waving their flag, deep down there's some insecurities that they're inadequate.
Right.
Do you know how I know that to be true, whether they admit it or not? Because throughout history, we've constantly been seeking the approval and the validation and the equality of being just like our oppressors, instead of saying we are better than you and we want more than you. That's what we should have been saying all along. And we didn't start saying that until this Bible started coming out. So that identity piece is so powerful. So it starts in there with that vision. And then once that vision is painted, now you put the plan of action, which starts with the commandments. That's the foundation of where all these rules, all these policies and everything we have here in IUIC, it starts with the foundation of those commandments. That's why when somebody bucks up against it, well, show me where note taking's in the scripture. Well, show me where me cleaning the toilets is in the scripture. Are you that simple?
Right.
That you don't think the nuances of having a city and building a nation and having a school and having a sanctuary don't require those offices? The priest had offices that they had to maintain. The altar just so, right? The showbread, the candles, right? The menorah.
Sacrifice.
The sacrifice, everything just so. There were different offices in there. You read, I can't remember the name right now, there was even levels of offices below the priest that tended to those things. But you go to a job and they tell you, listen, this is the janitor, this is the one that maintains the kitchen, this is the one that does this department. Nobody says, where is that in the Bible? Where is that in the handbook?
Right.
You just go with that. When it comes from Esau, you just go with it. You come here, we try to set structure and order to things, right? And remember when we interviewed Dr. Sanchez, he said there's, you got to weed those type of people out. There's a lot of people there that are like that. Mm-hmm. And he says, you got to wind up weeding those people out. He says, you have to have rules and regs. You have to have that. We call them the commandments. Right. We call them the policies that we're pushing out.
They said, let all things be done decently.
All. Not some.
Right.
All.
Yes, sir.
That should encompass it enough for everybody with that, right?
Yeah, right.
So these people came from different walks of life, and because they had a vision painted to them, they were able to come together and do something pretty powerful at the time, considering, you know, the environment and how we were seen and perceived, right? And we're still seen and perceived the same way. It's just hidden, right? They spare it now, right? Like we read in Job 20. So where we're at. Others had young families, while most had virtually no experience with community organizing and only limited experience with radical politics. Muzio, however, attributes a somewhat latent political consciousness to some of the founding members. And this goes into what it says in the book, how they were the most radical group because of what they came out of with Balaguer and Trujillo. All right. So it says founding members as a consequence of the radical social milieu of the era and the familial ties of some members of El Comité to the Nationalist Party's movement for independence in Puerto Rico. Excuse me. To illustrate this point, Musillo traces the origins of El Comité to the so-called ice cream action, which took place around the same time Operation Move-In was underway, excuse me, in the summer of 1970. As founding member Pedro Rentas tells in the book, a group of approximately 20 men went to the sandlot in Central Park to play baseball on a hot summer day in June. Afterwards, they solicited donations from neighbors in order to buy beer, unexpectedly collecting almost $100, which was then spent on ice cream for the children in the neighborhood. The following week, this collective of mostly Vietnam veterans, factory workers, and unemployed laborers were inspired to not only repeat this kind act, but to also host an outdoor movie screening of Planet of the Apes. So what he's telling you what happened here is that they saw how easy it was for people to put up money for them to buy beer.
Mm-hmm.
They raised $100 in, what was that, the 70?
70.
That was a lot of money.
A lot of money,
yeah.
That's more than enough for them to buy the beers for the baseball team.
In the 70s, you could do a lot with $100.
And they said, see, so because their mind, remember, it says they were radicalized because of what was going on. So it takes a certain individual, right, in this walk to see those types of things and do something with it. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know what? Let's do something for the kids instead, right? Instead of consuming it upon their own lust and getting the beers, right? Not that there's anything wrong with a nice cold beer, right?
They probably got them too.
Right, they probably had enough to get some beers too. They don't tell you that, right? You know, Northern Kingdom being Northern Kingdom. Right? And my grandfather always had a Budweiser in his hand, right? Or Coors Light back in the day. But they saw something in that, and they said, "Damn, let's do this again, and we can start raising money." Hey, and you know what else that shows you? You go to the Christian church, people don't care about giving alms. Nobody questions money and things like that. And I'm not saying that happens a lot in here, but we did have a few years back everybody trying to question what was being done with money and IUIC and stuff like that when we had the falling away of some people. And in this stuff, they were able to unify behind it. Nobody asked when you're doing stuff like this. They told them it was for beer. They took it, right?
Right.
You get here, you got people talking about, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, what are they doing with the money, this, that, and the other, right? And I get where that sentiment comes from, but why does it only manifest when it's your people doing something positive?
Right.
None of those questions are answered and none of this stuff. Man, y'all gave money to the Red Cross,
right.
Cancer funds, AIDS research, right. Breast cancer awareness, all these other things.
To
the bum on the street that probably went and put it in his vein. Maybe you gave him cab money to go molest a child.
Right.
And you never questioned any of that.
Right.
See, that's why vision's so important. And the vision being painted in someone's mind and to be there as that foundation. Remember Christ said, where your heart is, there will your treasure be.
Right.
So you'll lay up treasures in that versus things here. So these guys in that spirit, in that vein, saw that, and they moved into bigger things with this, right? So it says, at the time, the Upper West Side was a working class, densely populated neighborhood, racially and ethnically diverse. Museo 17, yet plagued with territorial gang violence. The film screenings, according to Rentas, provided not only free entertainment, but an opportunity for people to gather on neutral ground. So it to do something together, something as simple as let's get together as a community, it quelled the violence for a little bit amongst themselves. It created a neutral environment where they came together. I mean, that's, you know, when you talk about a sanctuary, and the scripture tells you there's little sanctuaries everywhere. When you get together, whether it's at a physical IUIC school or camp that's just starting and a brother or sister has opened up their house to have you convocate there, that's the beginnings of community, right? And in that community, unity is part of that word, right? It's people coming together with something common, unified in something common. That's what a community is. And there's power in those beginnings, right? It creates a spirit. It creates a vibe. Of us beginning to be on one accord,
right.
Us beginning to, this is why we have to deal so strongly when there's certain variants or heresies or something like that. That's going into a little leaven, leavening the whole lump.
That's right.
Those things got to be put out because you're going to damage the common unity that we all have by bringing in things contrary to the doctrine that we've been taught. So it's important. And I'm making these parallels to show you that because for some people, they think it's like something that a bunch, because what it is that the ones that do have an issue with it, they see us as a bunch of power hungry Negroes, right? Or power hungry Hispanics. And it's all rooted in division. It's because they have not spent the time to build themselves up in what the vision is.
Bring it out.
What the community that we're building is, what the organized nation that we're building is. But these groups, without the commandments,
right,
for some measure, were able to do those things. Mm-hmm. Right. So this commitment to activism rooted in the community is an enduring component of El Comité's legacy. And that goes into, you know, over the past few weeks, we've been talking about Acts 4 and Acts 2 and the community of possessions. Right. What the world would call socialism. Socialism is the closest thing I can say for us to understand that, because socialism is really the political way to try to identify. And then it's a dirty word in politics, right?
Right.
But really, and I've gone over this on the show, socialism is really at the root of it. Us as a community, us as a people, right, as a nation, keeping that royal law, right? Mm-hmm. Loving your neighbor as yourself. And if that means showing you where you're wrong and where you're in sin, we do that. And if that means lifting each other up, where the righteous is not forsaken for bread, then we do that too. Right.
Yes, sir.
So it says an enduring component of their legacy reinforces the immediate perception of its members in the aftermath of Operation Move-In as a principled group with no hidden agenda or desire for acclaim. It says go up a little. Go up. Leave it. Don't go down. It says the commitment to activism. Right. Our activism should be in this Bible. There's lessons to be learned in all these things that we've been bringing out. It says the commitment to that activism has to be rooted in the community, and it was an enduring component for them, but it needs to be an enduring component for us as well. And it reinforces the immediate perception. Immediate. That means you got to come in and get with the program.
Right now.
Right now. the immediate perception of its members in the aftermath of what they did with Operation Moving, because they were able, at the end, they wound up getting pushed to the South Bronx and Northern Manhattan, like we saw. But they, for a time, were able to resist that thing, right? And if we're doing this thing in righteousness, we know what's there for us, right? It's not something that's going to be taken away.
That's right.
It says a principled group, right. Not just a group. With unity comes rules. With unity comes a program. With unity comes structure. Right. I'm going to take a word from Bishop Yaroslav. With unity comes organizational rigidity. When something is rigid, that means it's firm. We stick to it. It says a principled group. We must be principled. What are our principles? First and foremost is the commandments.
That's right.
It's the foundation of that. It's the foundation of what the apostles built, with Christ being that chief cornerstone, right? A principled group with no hidden agenda. There is no hidden agenda. People joined this and did not think there was a hidden agenda. People come here with the Bible plainly out there, the principles clearly laid out. Oh, there's a hidden agenda. They can't do what they're doing without some hidden agenda. Right. A principled group with no hidden agenda or desire for a claim, right? None of us wants a name for ourselves. None of us is looking for fame. Bishop did a class way back, I want to say, it might have been in Paulding, and it was called Fame in Israel, right? Great class. And he was talking about, don't worry about trying to get recognition and a name for yourself now. And he was bringing out that in Israel, there will be fame. Those of us who worked and laid that foundation, you'll hear this another way where people say the Acts of the Apostles are still being written. It's going to be fame in Israel. You're going to be, you're this guy that during this period in Israel's time in this wilderness, right? Because I brought that out, that this is a form of the wilderness that we're in. You did all these works. You did this. You're so-and-so that did this, right? That's when that acclaim will come. Now, no hidden agenda or desire for acclaim, letting you know that if you want to last long in this walk, this is that immediate perception you need to have. You need to realize that we're a principal group, right? We need to realize that there's no hidden agenda. It's God's program that we're on. And no desire for acclaim. There's another scripture that talks about don't exalt yourself, right? God will exalt you in due time, right? God will exalt you in due time. Independent of elected leaders, right? We don't have elected leaders. God has put certain people in place based on their works and their drive to do what they're going to do.
That's right.
There'd be no IUIC today if not for the foundation of the leaders that came before us and endured. Because you have a lot of people that say, well, I contributed to that. Maybe the ones that aren't with us no more, but I contributed to that. Well, the foundation stays. A foundation isn't something that you pull out, right?
Right.
You build a foundation of a house. If you were to pull out a piece of that foundation, that's damaged goods. The house is unstable. So it don't matter what you did if you did not endure in this. It don't matter what you brought to the table once upon a time.
That's right.
Especially if you return to your vomit.
Right.
So it says an anti-poverty agency. That goes into the community of possessions where we talk about you don't see the righteous forsaken for bread. That bought into institutional politics and compromised community interests. All right. Anyway, go ahead. Go on. Is there anything else on that?
You need me to read?
Okay, let me see that. No, I'm all right.
Okay.
Musio also argues that this brand of grassroots activism counters the misconception that radical organizations of the Puerto Rican left were primarily concerned with the struggle for Puerto Rican independence. So he's saying it was important that they realized that it wasn't just about Puerto Rican independence from the island, they were concerned with the community there at large as well, and not the material condition of Puerto Ricans living in a diaspora. By 1973, El Comité began an internal process of reorganization. Despite a lack of formal education among the founders of El Comité, the group sought to educate itself politically, continuing a process of organic growth of their ideological platform. 2 years later, they officially changed their name to El Comité, M-I-N-P, and emerged as a Marxist-Leninist. So they got all into politics and stuff like that. But that's it on that. I'm not going to continue reading that article. My point was, is I wanted to bring out the similarities also that fighting, that spirit of
revolution
was there also.
Right. And it goes to show you that, too, because I don't know what it's called, in that letter. You saw it said there were people with young families, there were people that worked, and there were people who had no organizational skills, but they all had that same spirit and that zeal to be leaders in the community.
Yeah, you're right about that. All right. I had more pages in the book, but they're not super important to what we're going over. I want to watch a little bit of this video that I promised about Cuba. We're going to watch some of it, and I might tell you to jump ahead. I'm not sure. I watched like half of it, maybe a little more than half. But he says some important things. But let's start with the beginning of this, all right?
Biden called on global leaders at the United Nations yesterday to work together on combating the climate crisis and the COVID pandemic. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador is pushing Latin American and Caribbean nations to form a new European Union-style bloc.
They're going to talk about that, how Cuba made the vaccines. I think this was more important. They said the Latin American and Caribbean coalition, all right? So that's not just Northern Kingdom. That means they're getting together with Levi. Right. They're getting together with Benji, right?
Yep.
And they're saying it's time for us to try to fight back in their rules, in their sandbox. So they want to form like their own European Union type of thing, but they want to call it the Latin Caribbean Union, right? Just go back to the beginning, because I know we're switching gears, and sometimes people don't give the full attention to something that's coming out. But listen to what's happening here, right? So I see this as, listen, ultimately we know that things like this are not going to – it's Christ that's going to redeem us and bring us up. Right. But this is a positive thing, because what I see when I see things like this is that I see – even though, because sometimes you out there, man, and you dealing with our people.
Right, bring it out.
Especially Northern Kingdom.
Right.
And you're like, damn, when they going to get it together? We preaching there, they not receiving. We know there's a remnant. We know there's a remnant that have that spirit. We just haven't, the word don't go out void. We just haven't hit, we haven't seen the fruits of the right ones fully yet in some of these places. We do. We have a remnant of brothers and sisters here and there. Hell, there's some of us here, you know. I was thinking the other day of the Northern Kingdom captains, and we were like a core in this that came. You know, we weren't there from 03 when IUIC was formed. We came like 08, 09, 010, depending on which captain you're talking about. But I said, damn, I said, you know, there's a significant role that we've had to play and will continue to play, right, just because of, you know, the amount of time that we've put in, the amount of effort, you know, having a different understanding than some people who may have come later and something that was a little more full and things like that. And what I see when I see things like this is that I see potential in these places. Because what I'm seeing now is, remember, I always say you have to be able to preach when you go to these international places the things that are relevant to them. And racism is a global thing. We're hated of all nations, right? You read that in Deuteronomy 20:37 will be a proverb and a byword in all nations. But they have different conditions sometimes, right? We can't go to certain Latin American countries and say the white man got you oppressed when nobody else is owning their stores. It's theirs, right, and this and that, right? We got to be able to articulate. But they are under the curses, is my point. And you got to be able to find those pressure points to do that. So with that being said, what I'm trying to say is that when I see this, that means they can identify the common threat. Mm-hmm. Because she's going to tell you exactly why. She says they're forming this thing to counter the right. U.S.'s influence. This is she going to say. So I see the potential there. And we know it from the scripture, but there's things that sometimes you need reinforcement. Sometimes there's things that's a refreshing to your spirit. And I see the potential there and a ripe time for us to be out there pushing this word, right, appropriately. You know, you can't go speaking from a perception of America
right.
to some of these other countries, because it's not exactly like that. You got to find out how have the curses manifested there for them today. Right. Go ahead.
Well, as President Biden called on global leaders at the United Nations yesterday to work together on combating the climate crisis and the COVID pandemic, Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador is pushing Latin American and Caribbean nations to form a new European Union-style bloc to counter U.S. influence across the hemisphere.
So they're trying to counter the Monroe Doctrine, which we've spoken about for months on this show also, right? that America, that the United States is the police and the authority of the Western Hemisphere. They said they're trying to gather themselves together, right, to combat their influence in the region, right? About damn time. Come on.
AMLO made the call during a meeting of the Community of Latin American Caribbean States in Mexico City, attended by regional leaders, including the presidents of Cuba and Venezuela.
Stop. So the reason she says including Cuba and Venezuela is because those two are in the United States sites right now, hard, right? And we know why. I mean, we haven't gone into it heavy in Venezuela, but we know why. It's all similar reasons. We went into it heavy with Cuba as to the reason why also, but go ahead.
He criticized the outsized influence the U.S. has on the Organization of American States and denounced the U.S. embargo of Cuba.
It is time to end the lethargy and establish a new and vigorous relationship between the people of America. It seems to me that it is time to replace the policy of blockades and mistreatment with the option of respecting each other, walking together, and associating ourselves for the good of America without violating our sovereignty.
So he's still speaking nice, you know, to master and stuff like that. But what's heavy is that you have these leaders of these countries where people are saying this, which means they also recognize that their people are also getting tired of this stuff. So that's what I'm saying. It's ripe right now for us to jump in there. It's not a joke when we say the 11th hour is upon us. I mean, we don't necessarily know exactly what time it is, but we know the 11th hour is when Northern Kingdom is going to start really starting to repent. So there's a large mission ahead of us to hit these places, because in times past, they might not have been mean. They might not have been the right mindset in these places. So the opportunity there is stronger now than it ever was. Go ahead.
At the regional meeting, Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel criticized the United States for intensifying its blockade at a time when Cuba is facing a surge in COVID cases and deaths.
To acknowledge support for the lifting of the illegal economic, commercial, and financial blockade imposed by the United States against Cuba, which has been intensified deliberately and opportunistically during pandemic conditions. Despite being condemned for decades by the overwhelming majority of the international community.
The regional meeting comes as Cuba's playing a growing role in combating the COVID pandemic globally. Just this week, Vietnam signed a deal to buy 10 million doses of a Cuban-made vaccine. Cuba is also at the forefront globally of vaccinating children. Cuba recently began vaccinating children as young as 2 years old. We're joined now by Carlos Fernandez de Castillo. He is Director General for U.S. Affairs in the Cuban Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He's a former.
So I'm not saying that's good, bad, or indifferent, right? I'm not saying it's a better vaccine or whatever it is. But we know they're not influenced by U.S. influence there in Cuba. And we spoke about their self-sufficiency and able to do stuff. So they said, listen, we're going to come up with our own damn thing because nobody's helping us.
Right.
Nobody's helping us with this stuff, and they ain't going to help us. So we're going to make our own. And we know that their doctors, despite the demonization that we spoke about on this show, that they try to say about their medical, that are some of the best in the world.
Right.
So, you know, they came up with their own vaccine, and now other countries are getting hit to buying the stuff from them. And you know they're always charitable. We saw that when we went over Cuba. So don't be surprised if they start giving some of these to, like, you know, there's parts of Africa and things like that where they've not been able to get it, so on and so forth. So go ahead.
Cuban ambassador to South Africa and also to Canada. He's in New York for the United Nations General Assembly. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. So let's talk about what your island is experiencing right now. It's the worst COVID surge you've experienced to date. It still doesn't compare to the United States, which is at about 490 deaths per 490 deaths.
She messed up the statistics. She'll fix it later. Go ahead.
In the population, yours at 1,500. Can you talk about what's happening in your island? It's about three times better if all cases.
So what she's saying is that the statistic here in the States is that one in 490 die or get COVID. I think in Cuba, it's like one in 1,500. So that's better. That's a better percentage, right? So go ahead.
are being reported of deaths in the United States?
Well, we coped quite successfully during 2020 with the pandemic. Our figures were very, very low, thanks to the robust public health system in the country that was able to, through preventive measures, epidemiological preventive measures, to cope with the pandemic. But beginning in the first quarter of this year, with the introduction of the Delta variant, we started to have a surge that has plateaued since July, and it's at this moment has plateaued. And there's no way for us to deal with it without vaccinating the population in order to get the herd immunity that one needs to confront this. The fact that we were able to develop our own vaccines, we have four vaccines at this moment which are being applied, it has allowed us to put a limit in the amount of contagious infections. We have begun to reduce the amount of daily deaths, and we believe we should be out of the problem by the end of the year. Our plan is to end November with practically the whole population vaccinated.
Right, so stop. So he said, look, we know that we weren't going to get the resources and everything we need, so we had to basically pull together and do for ourselves, right? What I like from this was it's not so much the vaccine, but the self-sufficiency aspect, right? That they are able to go ahead and say, we know, right? We're not watching for a nation to help us. Are you 11:417 and are watching? We watch for a nation that cannot help us. They know that. They know that. So they said, we got to do it for ourselves. We're not going to try to look to somebody else to help us out. Keep going. I might have you jump ahead. There's a part where he says something else. Go ahead.
Just wanted to clarify, in the U.S., it's around 1 in 490 people have died of COVID, and in Cuba, it's around 1 in 1,500. Juan?
Yes, Ambassador, I wanted to ask you, what's been the strategy or approach of Cuba toward the vaccines compared to what's been happening in the industrialized West? And what advice would you have, your country have, to those countries that are, and to the companies like Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J, which are resisting technology transfers to make the vaccine as available as possible?
Well, our approach was to begin the process of finding a vaccine very early. In the month of March of 2020, when we still did not have anyone infected in Cuba, our president led an effort to try to produce vaccines. Even during the months of several months during 2020, when it seemed that we were able to control it just by the public health system, he insisted that we needed to do it because this virus could replicate, it could change, and we could have other pandemics, and we need to try to make an effort to develop. And that's why we have four vaccines. One of our aims also is the reason why we can be able to vaccinate children as young as 2 years old is that from the very beginning, the concept was that we needed a vaccine that could be applied to children because of the important role in the dissemination of viruses and the fact that we need to protect the whole population. Now, we think that the international effort should be to share, that this is not an issue for the great transnational corporations or the big transnational corporations to profit and to find that there's a great business.
Stop. That's what I wanted that part to come out. He basically lets you know that their goal is not profit, whereas the reason these other ones aren't sharing, not that we want that what they're injecting, but their whole aim is profit. And he goes, we're not motivated by profit, so this is why we're able to kind of do the things the way we're doing them and moving forward. Jump ahead to like 7:30. There was something else he said. He moves on to some other aspect. I don't want to make it seem like this is about the vaccine. I'm just trying to show you that he basically said, you know, screw you guys.
It's about our people showing that they have care for our people, right?
They were able to be self-sufficient in this stuff. This little impoverished country that, you know, the world has basically put on a blockade was able to come up with their own solutions. But go ahead.
To avoid contact and to spread the virus, and we need to make that sacrifice.
I wanted to...
And in terms of...
Go ahead.
In terms of tourism?
And, that's another point. Thank you. We had to shut the entrance of the country, and that has had a huge impact on the main source of income of our country. So we've had to cope with the pandemic, with having to shut the sources of income of our economy, spending huge amounts of money in medicine and keeping people in hospitals has been a big burden. And if you add to that the fact that the U.S. government chose to see in the COVID pandemic an ally in their aggression against Cuba. It's been a huge problem for us to cope with the issue. To give you an idea, it is prohibited by law in the U.S. to export oxygen to Cuba or to export medicine. You could get a license after very troublesome negotiations with companies that would be ready to run the risk of doing business with Cuba. But in practical terms, it is prohibited for Cuba to import medicines, to import raw materials, to import oxygen equipment from the U.S. to be able to face a huge problem like this one, or to buy those equipment or those medicines anywhere in the world if it has up to 10% of U.S. technology parts or items of origin.
Stop. So you see all the nuanced way that they – so if like 10% – and I'm sure they didn't randomly come to that number. They realized that anything produced anywhere in the world medical-wise has – like they figured, listen, we'll increase the chance of them not getting nothing if we do it at 10% because we estimate that we contribute 10% to all things. So meaning if the labels came from the United States – on the vials of medicine, they could not be sold to Cuba.
That's crazy.
Let me tell you, this blockade and this thing, we went over it in detail on the show, but it goes into that wearying them, right? And they haven't given in yet. It goes into wearying them. And, you know, I was worried that I said, they're not going to hang on. But, you know, they might have something going here with this little Latin Caribbean Union thing that they're trying to do there, you know? Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you about another health issue. The House of Representatives yesterday unanimously passed a bill authorizing additional support for U.S. officials who were injured in a series of mysterious episodes.
I like this guy. He's been pretty straightforward with the stuff. So they're calling this thing Havana Syndrome, where they're saying that U.S. diplomats were being attacked by the Cubans. I like to believe they are sticking it to him and they're giving it to them, but he's going to talk about the propaganda and how, you know, they basically, it's just another attempt at them demonizing. He's basically saying in a roundabout way where he's about to say that he wouldn't be surprised if it's the U.S. doing that to their own diplomats to try to blame them. Go ahead.
Caused traumatic brain injuries. It's called Havana Syndrome because that's where it was first identified. But it has gone far beyond that. I mean, you have U.S. diplomats and CIA officers who've been injured in China, Central Asian countries, Europe, including Vienna, two possible episodes in the United States. The Cuban government has been cooperating with the U.S. government in looking for what is the cause of this. Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, just had a meeting with infuriated intelligence officials who were sickened by this, perhaps unfairly called Havana Syndrome. What are your thoughts on it?
You mentioned that Cuba has been cooperating with the U.S. government. I would think the correct term would be that we have been trying to cooperate with the U.S. government. There hasn't been much effort or welcoming from the U.S. government from the very beginning. Over 3 years have gone by. The U.S. government has no answer to explain what has happened. Many of the theories that have been put out there, sometimes under a scientific banner, have been highly questioned by the scientific community of Cuba, of the U.S., of many parts of the world. Some of them simply cannot overcome the challenge of physics or known science, like having ultrasound or infrasound or weapons that can damage one person. Which
so he's saying they're lying, basically. He said they're just making stuff up. Good.
In the same room as another one without having any physical or visible effect. Very recently, a group of elite scientists from Cuba published an article trying to defeat many of the theories that have gone through. But in the past 4 years, the U.S. government has not been able to come up with an answer. It's one of those mysteries that go around in the United States and which remain unsolved and that are politically manipulated. The use of the term Havana Syndrome is deliberate. It has a lot of weight to try to single out Cuba as a place that is unsafe for American officials, which is totally untrue. Totally untrue, and there have been many inconsistencies in what the U.S. government has.
You know, them politicians in Washington are mad at this guy's interview, bro, because he sounded like Ahmadinejad, right, where he would freaking stick it to him, or Chavez, when he would stick it to the United States. Go ahead.
I said and yet it's not put to a challenge.
Ambassador, I'd like to ask you in terms of the policies of the Biden administration toward Cuba. You know, one of the most little remarked results of the U.S. Census is not only the increase of the Latino population in the United States, but the enormous increase in the Venezuelan population, about 126% increase in the number of Venezuelans in the United States in the last 10 years. Do you have a sense that this new, and of course, this hasn't gotten as much attention as the Central American increase in population, but I'm wondering, do you have a sense that the Biden administration is still kowtowing to not only the remnants of the old right-wing Cuban population in the United States, but also now this growing Venezuelan population?
The Biden administration policy towards Cuba today has been the Trump administration policy towards Cuba.
So he's basically talking about it's the same thing. It don't matter who's in office. He said the Biden policy has been the Trump policy. Nothing changes. Bro, you can even see his face when he was ready to answer the question, boy. Like, he's just like, damn.
It's reminding me of Catherine Parr.
Well, that's the face he would make?
Yeah.
Good.
Towards Cuba today has been the Trump administration policy toward Cuba. There's no change whatsoever. The government said that it was going to revise, that the revision is going place, by which it separates itself from the, at least it gives the impression of separating from the Trump approach, but at the same time applying faithfully the same policy that Trump designed against Cuba. It's a policy that does not reflect the points of view of the majority of Americans. It does not reflect necessarily the point of view of the majority of Cuban Americans. I can't speak about what Venezuelans who live in the United States believe, but what most people tell us, and again, this is what we are told, is that there's a lot of political calculation. There's no U.S. strategic interest. There's no U.S. strategic priority being met by the policy towards Cuba. It's purely and simple crude politics related to Southern Florida. This is what we are being told.
Stop. Okay. We don't need no one. The rest of the interview is really good. If you want to post the link, you can put it. But you heard him. He said that there's nothing for them to gain. There's nothing strategic in what they're doing. They're just being cool.
Right.
They're just being cool. A Justin B put, he says, they got no problem calling that Havana syndrome, but let someone call COVID the China virus. Right. Because we are despised by every nation in the earth.
Right.
We are despised. They're going to go to defense for Moab and them. But, it's those spics in Cuba. Yeah, you could call it the Havana
that's
syndrome.
Cuban hate.
That's what they'll say. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that, there's a lot of news out there around Northern Kingdom and things like that. They're not mainstream stuff. They won't make it mainstream. You won't hear those type of things. Hey, and I'll tell you another thing. You know, you got a lot of Americans, and they'll look at people like from Cuba, whatever, and they'll tell you that we're uncivilized, whatever. That's a very intelligent dude that was speaking
right
there, bro. Even with his accent and all, because I'm telling you, man, some of these heathen, bro, you come across them, you got an accent, bro. They get so nasty. Like, right away, they assume you're dumb, and they the ignorant ones, bro. Like, freaking stupid. So, any closing thoughts, comments, today's show? Well, I didn't get to the questions. Hold on to them. Right? We will not be having the show next Wednesday. We will be having the Saturday show, Lord's Will, Captain Apart, hosting that. We will not be having the show next Wednesday due to Day of Atonement. And then the week after that, we're going to be in the wilderness. I think a lot of people will be in the wilderness. I'm trying to see if maybe we do a little live audience thing. I know we might not get a lot of people turned in, but there are a lot of Israel that might not be able to keep Tabernacle. So we might possibly, I can't assure you because I don't know what the connection speed will be like and stuff, but we're trying to see if we can do a little broadcast with a live audience of the Power Hour Plus in our usual slot the week after next. All right, so we'll make sure, watch the social media channels. If we're able, we'll put out the information that we will be having the show, and we'll see what format we do. We'll probably have some special guests on that show. We'll have a nice little panel there and see. So I'm trying to make it happen. I think it'll be chill. It'll be chill for the people live, and it'll be nice for some people who were not able to make it out to Tabernacle.
Well, we tabernacking.
To watch and see what we got cooking there. So we'll see. We'll see what we got. All praise to the Most High. We appreciate the continued support. Don't forget to tune in Saturday. No show next Wednesday because of Day of Atonement. All right. And with that, we say shalom.
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 Shalom. Christ bless.
Oh, I had to warm up my cornet.